Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, joined by my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. In what has now become a familiar pattern, we will give you all some housekeeping and news items first, and then we will move into breaking down another heartbreaking Rice loss.
We'll mix it up eventually. Hopefully. Yeah. We promise. Yeah, a couple of notes first. Of course, thank you everyone who has subscribed and follow us wherever you listen to your podcast. We do appreciate that, and we appreciate your notes that y'all have sent us on social media and everywhere else saying what you like, what you don't like, what you want to see in the show. We appreciate that. So if you haven't yet and you'd like to, please go ahead and leave us a review anywhere you'd like. Maybe we'll read it on the show. Maybe we'll give you a shout out. Either way, we'll be very appreciative. And then, of course, make sure if you haven't had the chance yet or you've been putting it off, go ahead and join the site, become a member, get access to the forum and practice notes and all sorts of things, injury updates, the latest, which unfortunately, I guess we have more injury updates now that we've gotten into, I guess, November soon by the time we play our next game. So unfortunately, there's a lot going on that front, and we'll have it all here for you on the Roost website and that side, and then a couple Rice things that we can get into. Of course, this weekend is homecoming, the game against Marshall. They've already, I've noticed that Rice has put together a retro style package that they put on all their branding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I love that script. Yeah, the cursive scripts is really nice, and I also like that very like 80s. Like fierce looking owl.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Like I love the new stuff, like the old script R in the state of Texas that they've been wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's awesome. I'm a sucker for the old stuff though.
Yeah, always good to drop throwbacks every now and then. Now they just need to pick a weekend where they can do the old like Eagles style winged helmets.
Yeah, I'm a fan. Fun
throwback.
I've been telling folks that they need to bring whenever they play Texas. They need to go bring back the wings. Don't wear it all the time, but, you know, just enough to pay homage.
Yeah, you know, we'll throw back now and then.
That's a complete aside. A couple other sports news. Men's basketball first exhibition game is October 31st. That is Halloween. If you're listening to this on the day that we put it out, that is tonight. So go ahead and give that a shot in between your trick-or-treating. Or you know what? It's going to be freezing and very cold, so skip trick-or-treating and go support the Owls. That's an option. You can go buy the candy.
They'll probably have candy there, yeah.
Yeah, they got to have something. Wear a costume. Why not? And then the women's basketball team, they get underway the following week, November 5th, versus Nichols State. So we have lots of Rice sports going on, and we are adding more to the mix. But we are here primarily this week to talk about football.
Yeah, do we want to hit any other CUSA scores this from last week before we get into Southern Miss?
Yeah, I think there was a couple interesting things. So we're going to talk about Marshall upcoming and preview that at the end of the show. But they survived the comeback attempt by Western Kentucky. They were up, I think it was 17 points, and Western Kentucky clawed back, tied the game before Marshall kicked a field goal with time expiring to win. So Western Kentucky, up to that point, had been undefeated in conference play. So kudos to Marshall for going up big on them and then, you know, almost letting them claw back. So that was interesting, to say the least. And then the last unbeaten Conference USA team, Louisiana Tech, took care of business against UTEP 42-21. The game was not that close. So Louisiana Tech riding high and looking pretty good with only a handful of really interesting games left remaining for them. West is clearing out. And one of those teams, North Texas, lost to Charlotte 39-38. So that was a team picked to win Conference USA by the majority of the coaches and other teams around. And they are at the point where they're going to start having to worry about being eligible for a bowl, which is a bit of a decline from where they expected to be. So never a dull moment in Conference USA.
Yeah, everything's turning out exactly like we expected, right?
Yeah, just put all the teams into a hat or a bag, shake it up and pull a couple out. It kind of feels like that's what it's like some weeks.
Yeah, more or less. All right, well, I suppose we have to talk about the Southern Miss game. You know, in a lot of ways, it's the same script that we've had to talk about all year long. On one sense, a sort of encouraging sign that the defense kind of got back to the form they had kind of had in non-conference play and kind of in the first game against the first conference game against Louisiana Tech, where they
and maybe even better.
Yeah, I mean, the Southern Miss schedule going in against, excluding their two games against SEC teams, they had scored 38, 47, 31, 45, and 30 points so far this season. And Rice held them to 20. And through, I mean, what, how late was it in the game when they scored that last touchdown, right? It was pretty late.
Through 59 minutes, they'd gotten in the end zone once.
Yeah. So a pretty stellar performance. And, you know, it's a lot of the stuff we said coming into this game, you know, you feel like Rice, certainly on that side of the ball, can play with anyone in this conference. It's just a matter of whether they have the consistency week in and week out. And, you know, after a couple weeks against UAB and UTSA, where they didn't look maybe as good as we could hope, it was nice to see them kind of bounce back and put together another great defensive performance.
Yeah, well, and this was kind of the litmus test, right? We've seen them play up against different offenses, and what we kind of posited before conference play began was once they get to the point where they're not playing teams that have an insane athletic advantage against them, we should see them become more competitive. And through the first quarter, the Rice defense held Southern Miss, the number one scoring offense in Conference USA, to 0 points. The entire list of teams that have held Southern Miss to 0 points in the first quarter: Alabama, Mississippi State, and Rice.
Ah, and it's my brand.
There you go.
Other than Mississippi State.
Mississippi State is everyone and no one's brand at the same time. But I mean, so that was impressive. And Jack Abraham, who is probably averaging somewhere around 2-ish touchdowns a game, has thrown for 400 yards several times this season. No touchdowns, an interception, and 207 yards passing.
And what, like less than 6 yards an attempt?
Yeah.
Just all, and like, if you look at the final, I mean, their final yards per play, they had 364 yards on 71 plays. So that's barely over 5 yards a play, which isn't like a dominating performance on defense, but for an offense that good, like, not one that you have like a reasonably even like talent matchup with, that's a pretty good yards per play, especially when you consider that the Rice defense was going out there time and time again after getting just absolutely nothing from its offense. To hold up like that over and over again over the course of the game is really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching along with y'all a little bit. I feel like I tweeted out, and if you haven't checked out yet, we do a live blog and keep you up with scores and stuff on the site, and I'm usually live tweeting along with the important things that are going on. I feel like if you look back at the Roost Twitter feed, you'll see, okay, the defense is going to have to win the game. And I probably tweeted that 8 or 9 times in the second half as the offense would not go anywhere. And I'm like, all right, the defense has to go do something incredible again. And time again, they did.
Yeah. And in this conference, in a conference game at home, if you hold an offense as explosive as Southern Miss to 20 points, that ought to be enough to get the job done. I mean, sure, there were plays they could have done better, individual moments, but you're ultimately not going to have perfection most of the time. So when you execute that well and you hold an offense that's that good and that explosive and that can put up that many points to 13 points until the final, you know, final minutes of the game, that ought to be enough.
But yeah, and especially if you consider where the Rice special teams unit was playing and coming into the game, we talked about when we were previewing this, the electric nature. They had 4 special teams touchdowns, whether it be by kick return or punt return entering the game. I think maybe they had one or two returns. They got nothing going. Yeah, they had a
One kick return for 18 yards, one punt return for 2 yards.
Yeah, and a kick return from 18 yards that gets you stopped before the 25-yard line is a bad play. It's a suboptimal play. So there wasn't much that Southern Miss did to help their offense get into productive positions. They were quite often set up with long fields to drive and score. You know, that was kind of a bonus that for the defense is that, yeah, the Rice offense was not going and did turn the ball back more often than not, but it wasn't at the point where there was enough short fields that the defense was compromised and having to stop people from a 20-yard drive. Very, more often than not, it was a 60 or a 70-yard drive. And so at that point, you can give a first down or two and still be okay. And that's what Rice was able to do, kind of bend a little bit, but shut down when they needed to. Southern Miss had 4 red zone possessions in this game, scored 1 touchdown, and were held to 3 field goals, one of which they missed. I don't know what else we could ask this defense to do.
Yeah, I mean, Naeem Smith came up with another interception. They had 6 total tackles for loss, no sacks, but this is one of those games where you can try to say, well, pass rush is more than just getting actual sacks. And this is one where I felt like that actually kind of held true. Like, they may not have actually gotten home on any of them, but they had 5 quarterback hurries and felt like impactful plays on all of those, where they were really affecting Abraham and forcing him to rush throws and rush reads.
Yeah,
and not be able to get the ball out. Yeah,
and he couldn't throw the ball downfield. They have some really fast receivers. And one note on that that I thought was interesting. This defense was playing at such a high level that DeBraylon Carroll, who's a 300-pound defensive tackle, chased down DeMichael Harris in the backfield, who probably runs an obscene 40 time and is even faster on the field. And at that point, I was just like, oh, wow. Like,
yeah,
they came to play.
Yeah, really impressive. Carroll had a TFL. He had a hurry. Blaze Aldridge had another 1.5 TFLs. Kenneth Orji, really nice game, had 10 total tackles. Just really solid all around. I mean, the Southern Miss's longest passing play was 31 yards. Like we said before, no passing touchdowns. So, yeah, I mean, kind of like you said, I don't know what else you would want this defense to do for you that they didn't do on Saturday.
Yeah, and then there was almost a moment in the second half where I couldn't tell what happened, but Antonio Montero and I think it might have been maybe Trayshon Chamberlain, one or the other, they got a pass that was thrown up the middle that it looked like Antonio got his hands on but wasn't sure if the other guy was going to go for it, and came close to being a second interception that really would turn the game. So at that point, if the only thing that you can ask the defense to do is please get more turnovers on top of the turnovers you're already forcing, then you've pretty much covered all your bases. And now you're just asking for more. We can already see like a clear step change from where this defense was from where it was a year ago. But in this game, so Andrew Byrd missed because of an injury he suffered the prior week against UTSA. Trayshon DeVones was supposed to be the guy taking over in his spot. And instead, DeVones ended up not feeling well and getting sick. Friday, not good injury luck or illness luck. But he wasn't able to go on Saturday. And so Jason White, who entered the season as the backup nickel corner, started the game along on the other side and, you know, played really well. Like the knock on him is he's not particularly tall. And so that's one of the reasons that you probably don't see him on the field as much, especially if you're going up against, you know, the 6'2", 6'3", 6'4" receivers. But he had a good game. And if you would have told me a year ago that Rice, I mean, and you already have the suspension of D'Angelo Ellis, which haven't heard any clarity on that. I wouldn't assume we're going to see him anytime soon. So if you told me that Rice's loss is down 3 corners and they're on their 4th corner,
yeah,
and they were able to shut down one of the best quarterbacks in the conference, I mean, we keep saying it's phenomenal, but I think it's worth reinforcing that the combined play of the front seven helping that out and the secondary was next level.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've noticed. I think one thing that's probably helped that in terms of building that depth and being able to replace guys without having really any dropped off is that they rotate defensive backs really a lot more than most teams do. You know, normally, and you might see some rotation with linebackers and situational packages, and you see a lot of rotation up front on defensive lines to try to keep guys fresh. But generally, you see some shuffling of roles maybe between, you know, base and nickel and dime. But most teams don't rotate their defensive backs in and out a lot. Because, you know, if you've got, you know, a top corner or a really good safety, you don't really want to take those guys off the field. But they do that. You know, Isaiah Richardson is a guy who I wouldn't really have thought of as a starter on this team, but he always seems to be playing a lot of snaps. Obviously, they rotate Naeem Smith and Pretty Calderon sometimes. They, you know, move guys in and out. They move Treshawn Chamberlain all over the field and stuff like that. So the amount that they rotate those guys is kind of an unusual thing, and I would bet that that's helped a lot in terms of their being able to replace guys when they've had, you know, injuries and illness and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's had to, and especially when you have a couple of guys that you can ask to be the rocks and kind of build around them. I don't think we talk enough about George Nyquil and what he's doing at the free safety spot. He is such a luxury for this defense to have, and how smart and intelligent of a football player he is. And he knows how to read the defense and get everyone set up in the right place. Being able to put him and Blaze and Antonio and being in the middle of the defense, kind of keeping everyone in place, then it's a lot easier to bring in and cycle through corners or cycle through down linemen, because you know you have the guys in the middle and controlling and calling the shots on defense to be able to put whoever just ran in from the sideline into the right place and get them squared up. And I think that's been something you notice it, especially now whenever you're watching Rice offense or defense. Sometimes it feels like, you know, a hockey line change where they're sending in four or five guys, which even on defense today, it's not something that is all that common. Usually it's a guy or two to shuffle out from, hey, we're going to go from nickel to dime, or we're going to bring a down lineman back on for a pass rush or on third down or something like that. Usually you're not seeing, at least from my perspective, this many parts come in and out. And to continue operating at such a high level, like you said, it's pretty special.
Yeah, it's a really good positive sign, I think, for this program going forward as far as building it, because at so many programs at the G5 level and in Conference USA, the nature of what you can build is so cyclical, because you often have to kind of build a team up over time, and you kind of get to a point where things have worked out that you maybe have a lot of senior starters and you can put together a really good team when you do that. And then the next year you graduate some guys and you know, lose a player or two that maybe were under recruited and that you managed to grab that kind of fell through the cracks and that you had a lot of success with. And then you kind of have to start over next year because you have all these guys that you've lost and these really great playmakers that you can't just replace. But when you can rotate a ton and get guys a ton of snaps, it kind of mitigates that, because you can, when you replace starters, you're not just starting from scratch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you have guys like Garrett Grammer, who we talked about, who they made that big special teams play against UTSA, that right now is a reserve linebacker. And, you know, if, say, Blaze decides to leave early for the NFL, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but like, you have a guy that you feel comfortable sliding in there next to Montero, and you're like, yeah, it's a downgrade because he's not Blaze, but he's a really good football player. He's had a lot of exposure to the game, which makes it a lot different than where Rice was last year, bringing in a lot of true freshmen that might have been talented, but it's a whole different ball game playing at that speed.
And in that vein, I think it bears repeating that, you know, as frustrating as this season has been at times, especially with kind of, and it's always frustrating when you have a team like this that's kind of unbalanced between the units, where you might kind of feel like, oh, we're, you know, we're kind of wasting this defense because, you know, right now the offense just isn't good enough. And the defense is putting together all these solid performances and they don't have a win to show for it. That would be more frustrating, except that, as we reiterated several times during the preseason, Rice gets basically this whole defense back next year. Miles Adams graduates, and, you know, let's hope for Blaze's sake that, you know, he gets a really good draft grade and is able to go early, because that would be great for him. And obviously you want to celebrate that kind of success, but we don't necessarily count on that happening, let's say. So probably in your most realistic scenario, barring some transfers, which is always a possibility, but, you know, you're not going to predict that at this point. They get everybody but Miles Adams back next year. And Miles Adams is great, obviously, but, you know, I think they've shown to this point that they have the depth to replace him, certainly on the defensive line. And then you're going to add in another recruiting class. You're going to have all these guys that you've rotated in and that have gotten experience. So you're going to have really both, you know, you have guys who have proven they can do it, and you're going to have proven depth, and you're going to be adding in even more playmakers.
It's a good recipe.
You know, just to infuse a shot of hope for next year, the way things have gone so far, just keep that in the back of your mind, that we are not quote unquote wasting this defense, because they do have another year, basically all of them.
And even for this season, I know that we've talked about, and we've heard the staff say time and time again, that they want to be able to take teams to deep water in the fourth quarter, is the phrase that Blomgren is like to quote time and time again. And we've seen that for all of the offensive woes that we've had so far, these conference games in particular, one fourth quarter touchdown all of a sudden. And I maintain that had Rice scored on their fourth quarter possession when it was 13-6, I would have been shocked if Blomgren did not go for two at that point. I think we would have seen him take the advantage of the scoring opportunity that he had and try and punch it in. At that point, you're like upset if it doesn't work, but if it works, then you've just won a conference game with 14 points, which, you know, is certainly doable. So I think this defense continues to play at a high level. If you can get even a smidgen more from the offense, all these close one score games become tied to leading games in the fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden you can win a couple games down the stretch. Because, I mean, if you can get to the point where Southern Miss and Louisiana Tech are both beatable teams in the fourth quarter, those are two of the best teams in this conference.
Yeah, you know, it just goes to what we've said several times at this point. This team can play with anyone in this conference. There is no, you know, this is not a situation like, there is not a stratification here where this is a team that, even being 0-4 in conference, where they're going to go into games, they haven't gone into any games so far, and they're not going to go into any over the rest of the season, where you just go in thinking, let's just hope to keep this one respectable. There's just not that kind of separation. And if they can just put everything together in one game like they haven't been able to do so far, then you can come out with a win over anyone. But to do that, moving over to the other side of the ball, they're going to have to get a lot more out of the offense. I mean,
with quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, 139 total yards kind of speaks for itself overall. They were on six, they had 61 total plays, so that's barely over 2 yards a play, which is not going to get it done for anyone at any level. Wiley was fine for most of the game. I mean, it wasn't abjectly terrible, and he didn't have, you know, multiple repeated turnovers like in the game against UTSA. But the one that he did was a bad one. You know, what was even more frustrating, it was first and goal from the two. You know, they tried to, you know, get a guy isolated on the outside again in the one-on-one, throw a jump ball like they've done a ton and had a lot of success with. But, you know, you basically ended up with three defenders in the path of the throw. So yeah, unless
it was never getting completed.
Yeah, unless you were dropping an absolute teardrop right in the bucket, you weren't going to get that one. And that's fine. It was first down. You have at least two more downs to get that. Just throw the ball away or, you know, tuck it and, you know, run back toward the line, maybe lose 1 yard. Losing 1 yard there is better than taking an interception. So that's just...
Which is why you call that kind of play on first down, because you know you have a mulligan and you don't have to force a throw.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, after that, I wouldn't normally be in favor of pulling a guy after one turnover, even, you know, given the history of how things have gone this season. But that one was, you know, after all they've had with it this year, to throw that one in that circuit, like, that's not that happens sometimes. You have to know that you can't make that throw.
Yeah, and the thing was that Wiley had already gone past his leash, and so he was not supposed to be the one starting this game. So he got benched following his turnover the game prior, and Tom Stewart was practicing with the ones all week, and I was at practice throughout the week. He looked fine. The offense was moving, and then late Friday World Series is going on right now. The Max Scherzer, he was there, and all of a sudden he wasn't. Had a back problem. It was the same kind of idea for Stewart. All of a sudden, he's like, "Wait, what happened? He can't go." And so that was the point where the reason
Tom, I know you're a grad transfer, but you're not old enough to be having back problems yet, man.
You're spry.
Yeah,
spryer than some of us.
Yeah.
That was, and we still don't know. Tom might be back. He might not be back. At this point, we saw Evan Marshman get some run. He was kind of the guy that I mentioned this before the game in our kind of our pregame and game chat on the forum, that because of his experience and what he did last year, he's the kind of guy that I thought would be the, in case of emergency, we need a backup to run drives guy. And he came in and moved the offense about as well as Green did. Not much spectacular or anything, but he might be the guy that we trust to rely on for a game. And then we've already seen Giovanni, I guess, in two games now. So maybe we see him running and we have an Old Dominion sort of game at the end of the year where we bring in all of the promising young guys who have one game left to burn on their red shirt, and we go at it. I'm not sure quite yet how that's going to play out, but it's kind of frustrating because the offense, they running the ball. So this is no surprise, but other teams in Conference USA have figured out if we can just put 10 guys on the box and make Rice throw it, we'll have a pretty good shot. And that's exactly what Southern Miss did. And that's part of the reason why the running game wasn't very effective. I think once you take out the sacks, it was 2.8 yards per carry, which is not good. It's not.
Yeah.
I mean, could be worse, but I mean, Rice needs to be somewhere around the 4.5, not 2.5, 3. But Wiley took to the air, and he took a couple deep shots that were either right outside of the arm of a receiver or hit fingers or were pretty close, none of which could have been anywhere picked off. And I just felt like that Rice was so close to having some of those big plays. They had one that they threw deep and it hit Rosner on the hands at like the 2 yard line, and he couldn't pull it in. And there were several like that, you know, I felt like if the offense had, I mean, they struck out for the most part on those long plays. If they would have completed two or three, I feel like the complexion of this game would have changed pretty quickly.
You know, just shows how thin the margin for error is sometimes. Yeah, and the fact that the Southern Miss was loading the box all day, I think that's why you see, because if you actually look at the numbers, the running backs total had 14 carries on Saturday, which is a really, on the surface level, a shockingly low number for this Rice offense in a, you know, and it's not like they were behind the whole game, but it's not like they were, you know, so far behind that you couldn't run the ball based on game state. And then when you factor in the sacks, you know, they threw 31 passes, but then you add back in all the ones that were actually the sacks that were actually dropbacks. And so, you know, they probably called 40 passing plays to 20 runs in this game.
Yeah, which not is, the conventional mix.
Yeah. But that's, you know, I think that is a that mix, even though things didn't go well, is probably a credit to the coaching staff, because unlike the way a lot of fans of teams that run the ball a lot sometimes seem to think, if you're a team that wants to run the ball, it's not generally a good policy to just sort of slam your head against a brick wall when there are 10 guys in the box. If they load the box and give you one-on-one matchups outside, you generally should throw the ball, which is what Rice did a lot in this one. And like you were saying, it's just, you don't have to hit all of them. You just got to have some of those plays where you've got a receiver that's open enough. You got to get the ball in his hands down the field. And they just couldn't quite do it in this one.
Yeah. And I mean, we got to be intellectually honest, right? We know that this is an offense that wants to be predicated on running the football and grinding out the clock. But when you can't do that, then you would expect the coaching staff to adjust. This game, we would have felt, I feel like, even more frustrated the offense if they had tried to run the ball 40 times and they would have gotten to 100 yards rushing on 40 carries, and we would have been just as frustrated and probably would have ended up giving the other team the ball more often and having shorter drives. So the coaching staff did what they needed to, and they said, okay, if the ground game is not working, let's not just pound the rock for the sake of pounding the rock. Let's do something that has a chance. Because even though those deep passes and those longer shots down the field, they weren't falling, you kind of felt like there was just to the point where the odds of them having one of those get completed and making those big plays felt like a better opportunity for Rice to move the ball down the field in chunks than wait and see if you're going to break that 40-yard run.
Yeah.
Especially with Aston out of the game, unfortunately.
And then also, unfortunately, you know, this felt like this offensive line has not been dominant this year. They've been, I don't know, inconsistent is the word I would probably use. But this one was the first one where it felt like they kind of were, at least as far against an opponent of comparable talent, where it felt like they were kind of overmatched in the trenches a little bit. How many sacks does Southern Miss have? Eight. Yeah, you might be able to chalk the rushing numbers up to the number of guys in the box, but eight sacks is not going to get it done. And probably a lot of those sacks, a fair number of those sacks, are on Wiley Green and Evan Marshman, because you don't get to that number without the quarterback being responsible for some of those things. Generally, quarterbacks are responsible for more of their own sacks than people tend to attribute it to, I think. But you also don't get to a number like eight if your offensive line is blocking well up front. So
yeah, I think there was one series of plays where Rice was sacked three plays in a row. I don't even know how that happens. And I do want to give Wiley credit for this. Something I thought he did extremely well during the first half was that pressure was so intense, and Southern Miss was getting in the backfield, and he didn't have a clean pocket to throw from more often than not. And he was able to scramble and move and move around in the pocket and have opportunities to take those shots down the field. I feel like that's a progression that we've seen from him, where maybe he was taking more sacks, or at the very least holding on the ball longer than he needed to at the beginning of the season. And we saw against Southern Miss, he had sometimes where he took three steps and got hit to the point where it doesn't really matter who's at quarterback there. The offensive line was not playing as good as they have been. And I think a part of that was we had Brian Chafin, who's been at center all year, that was another late scratch for this game. And Shea Baker moved over to center and forced kind of a rejigging of the offensive line, which last week against UTSA was one of their better performances, and they were all healthy, which having those five in presence, you know, there's probably two or three games this year that it's been some combination and not really the full starting rotation like you'd like.
Well, I think talking about the offense is kind of a good transition into going forward, but do you have any last thoughts on Southern Miss?
I think that wraps it up. I will note one thing kind of in the post game and fallout, that Blomgren, if fans are frustrated, he's even more frustrated, and he kind of issued his own declaration in the post game, and he said that, of course, the offense is not good enough and that needs to change. But he said there will be changes in the offense this week, and they were going to go take a real hard look and figure out what those needed to be. So one tweak that they have gone ahead and instituted is bringing in, and there's several schools of thought when it comes to how you're going to break down film and prepare during the week. And I am not the X's and O guru that's going to tell you what the right way is. But one of the changes they're making on offense is bringing in the entire unit together and having the offensive coordinator, Jerry Mack, talk through all of the film that they're looking through together rather than segment it into position groups and having the individual position coach do that in an effort to kind of get everyone on the same page. And, you know, as hailing back to Blomgren's time in the NFL and things that, like that. So that's one tangible change that we will see how much that's going to pay off, but they are doing something and not sitting still.
Yeah, I'll be, you know, as far as if you're questioning where did that, you know, why would they have not been doing that before? I'm pretty sure the former approach of having position groups watch film separately tends to be kind of the norm, because the thing about like dedicated film study, you know, and this is something that I have learned in watching tape and breaking down plays myself, is that it takes a really long time if you're trying to break down every single aspect of every single play. And so it's generally a lot more efficient to be able to just kind of watch one thing at a time. You know, like when scouts or, you know, people who play scouting type roles in the media are studying players on offense, they don't just like pull up a game and watch, say, you know, every player on the Oklahoma defense or the Oklahoma offense all at once. They like, you pick a player and you watch all their games and you watch all their plays and follow it through. So it's generally much more efficient to do things as separate and granular as possible. But, you know, if they think that this is a measure they can take that's going to help everybody kind of get on the same page, then I support that. You know, going into, and, you know, we can talk about the Marshall defense as it comes up here. My plan was to sort of talk about the offense in broad strokes going forward, because I didn't watch a ton of the Marshall defense, and that's, you know, not any comment on them. But as far as this side of ball goes for both this game and going forward, my interest is less in what the opponent does and what the matchup is, and just where, because Rice can play with anyone, like we've said. And so I don't think there's any point where you're going to say, like, this defense is just too good, they can't do anything against them. It's just going to be, what is the answer here? What steps does Rice take to get something on offense? And I think with the way things have gone so far, that's really more dependent on them than it is on the defenses they play going forward. So I went and, you know, I looked at Blomgren's remarks from the Tuesday press conference this week a little more closely than I normally do. And I thought it was really interesting of him. He basically went out and said, like, look, this, what I will call the Stanford offense, for to be as concise as possible. You know, he talked about in terms of running the ball and running West Coast passing concepts. But this Stanford offense that he wants to import, that he wants to run, he still believes in that, and he believes that it's the best path for this team and the school going forward. And I'm inclined to agree. I think there's a lot of advantages to that for them, both on a number of levels. But he basically acknowledged that, like, it's not working right now. Like, they just largely as a function of quarterback play, sometimes as a function of offensive line play. But for whatever reason, it's just not working right now, and it's not really giving them the best chance to win. And so he's basically said, we are going to simplify this offense because it's complicated. It's really complicated. And that's been one of the things holding them back so far, I think. He basically said, we are going to simplify this offense. And we've had players who it's holding them back, that they have had trouble mastering all the concepts, and so they can't execute at a high level because they're, you know, they're thinking too much. So he basically has come out and said, we don't want that to be kind of the restrictor plate anymore. We want these guys to be able to just go out there and play. And that's one area where I think his foresight in hiring Jerry Mack as offensive coordinator was a really, really good move, because, you know, Mack comes from North Carolina Central, from a spread background. And so having a guy who has run an offense that runs, you know, what you could call modern principles, the shotgun, 11 spread, RPOs, those sorts of things, to be able to immediately turn to your offensive coordinator and say, okay, the stuff you used to do, we need to do more of that now, because what we want to do long term, it's not working right now.
Yeah, and I think I've noticed a shift in how they've called the game the past 3 or 4 weeks versus how they started off the season. You can see a lot more spread concepts. They're still running like the power toss and some of those more traditional 2 tight end, 3 tight end sets. You did see them line up and pick up 3rd and short in this game a couple times, with just putting everyone in the box and running over people with Charlie Booker, that's where this offense wants to be able to go all the time. But you've seen them kind of spread the field and say, okay, who are our playmakers? It's Brad Rosner and it's Austin Trammell, and finding ways to get them the ball in space and not trying to, you know, square peg, round hole kind of thing. So I think you've seen a shift there, and we'll see a little bit more against Marshall. And I think taking a closer look at their defense as a whole, I know that it's going to be a lot of what we said about Rice's own offensive scheme and how they attack this game and what changes they make is going to be arguably more important than whatever scheme that Marshall throws at Rice defensively. But an area that I think is going to be concerned is Marshall leads Conference USA in sacks as a defensive front. They have 29 sacks this season. Versus you look at Rice, a Rice defense that has 8 sacks in 8 games. And so you're talking about an offensive line that is trying to piece things together and just gave up 8 sacks last week. Even if Rice is able to trim things down and pare it back and have a scheme that they feel like is more conducive and simpler and easier to run, if they can't protect the quarterback, it doesn't matter what play you call.
Right. It's definitely going to be a challenge for them. And you pointed out, you're exactly right. They've essentially already been trending in this direction over the course of the season as they've kind of sifted through the playbook and pared it down and emphasized some concepts over others to look for what works. I just thought that was notable that he was talking about that. It's a kind of a point of emphasis this week about the simplification. But yeah, it's going to be a challenge to both. To look for that set of concepts that's both that the players are comfortable and well equipped to run, but it's also going to help them kind of neutralize that Marshall pass rush and to be able to, and you know, it helps that, you know, if you're working these RPOs and doing maybe some option stuff and stuff like that, that helps you kind of neutralize box numbers a little bit. It helps you get the ball out faster on some pass plays. So I think you'll definitely probably see a lot of the short passing game, a lot of quick throws, kind of spread principles in that vein to both because those are sort of simpler concepts for them to run as opposed to like full field reads out of the, you know, West Coast type passing concepts, and because it'll help neutralize that pass rush a little bit. I think you talked about, we don't really have a clear idea of what Tom Stewart's status is at this point. I think it's fair to assume, since he was the planned starter going into last weekend, that he will be the starter if he's healthy to go. But the question is, where do they go if he can't go? Do they go back to Wiley, who's now been benched in successive games? Do they go to Evan Marshman, who's been the third stringer and was just inserted to very little? I mean, and to be fair to Evan, like, it is not easy to be... Not only was he not practicing with the starters in the previous week, he wasn't even practicing with the back. Like, he was the third string guy. Like, he wasn't, you know.
Yeah, he's been running the scout team this season.
Yeah. It's hard for a guy to come in cold like that, even if you're the backup, you know, to make another Alabama reference, as I tend to do. But we saw this when, you know, when Tua went down against Tennessee. Mac Jones, the backup, looked terrible in that game, coming in relief because he just wasn't prepared for it. And then they came out and played Arkansas the next week when he had the whole week to practice as a starter, and he looked great.
So all you need is a Mac Jones lying in the wing, waiting, ready to go out and throw for, what, 5 touchdowns next week?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the answer? Well, if we've solved it, we better go ahead and tell Coach.
Yeah, very simple. my point being, to be fair to Evan, if he is the direction they decide to go and they game plan for that this week, I think he will look much better than he did in his very limited action because, you know, it's a lot easier to go out and out there and play when you've actually spent the whole week preparing to play. You know, coaches always say, well, backup should prepare like they're going to be the starter, but yeah, but it's a different thing when the team and the coaches and everybody is preparing for you to play, as opposed to, in Evan's case, literally running the scout team.
Yeah, and you can do everything right to prepare like you're going to be the starter and do all those things mentally. But when you're practicing, there's only one guy that can stand in the huddle with the starters and take the snaps at once. And so, especially if you're Rice has been the last, you know, couple weeks and throughout the season that it's been. Once Tom was named the starter, about 80% Tom, 20% Wiley. So you have a backup that is aware of the game plan and able to go execute. You know, whereas that has been 80% Wiley, 20% Tom when Wiley was the starter. Again, now Evan's going to be at the very least in the rotation, and he's going to be able to get some of those snaps. So the first snaps, meaningful snaps that he was really taking with Austin Trammell and Brad Rosner and Charlie Booker on the field, or with the Southern Miss defensive front bearing down on him, which is different than Rice's scout team defense. And so what I think, if it does end up being Evan Marshman, I think we're going to see the offense get tinkered with to the point where it's a lot more based on his ability as a runner, which is kind of what we saw last year. He came in once Sean Stankiewicz got hurt, I believe, during the UAB game last year. So he kind of came in and played the entire second half. And it was the same kind of thing there. He was thrust in the fire, kind of deer in the headlights, like, oh my goodness. And that was the game that Rice ended up losing 42-0. It was pretty rough. And then he came out the next weekend at Florida International, completed 11 of 15 passes, had 2 rushing touchdowns. And the offense was much better than it was against UAB. It wasn't great, but they were able to tailor it to what he did well. And so if it is going to be Evan Marshman that ends up taking the majority of the reps, and at this point, I think that's probably the most likely. If Tom can't go, I don't think that they would go back to Wiley after benching him 2 weeks in a row for his turnover issues, especially the big advantage sidebar that Wiley had on the rest of the quarterback's room was his comprehension and understanding of the offense. And if the offense is going to be pared down intentionally, then his biggest leg up, it doesn't have as much to stand on, especially if you add in the turnover issues as well. So I think it'll be Tom if healthy, and then plan B will be Evan Marshman with a bit more of that option, that zone read and quarterback running game mixed in.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was about to hit on. Regardless of who is a quarterback in this game, I expect that you will see a lot more of the quarterback option and
Tom can run too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we talked about this earlier in the year when they were bringing him in as kind of a sub guy, like they would bring him in to run that zone read stuff. And he, is still 2 touchdowns on the year running the keepers off the zone read. So, you know, that's a play that it's such a simple concept. It's not always simple to execute. It's a very simple thing to explain to somebody the way that play works, the backside defensive end is unblocked. If he crashes down on the running back, the quarterback pulls it. If he stays at home, the quarterback hands off to the running back. It's a very simple concept. It's not as easy to make that read perfectly every time as sometimes people think it is. And I think that's often an underrated part of a running quarterback skill set. But Tom makes those reads well. They've used it with him consistently. Like you said, they ran Evan a fair amount last year. If they just decide to go and throw Giovanni Johnson out there, quarterback on this game. Obviously, he is the guy that they like the athleticism of. So, you know, that's something they can do that will make your running game more effective generally, because you can even out the box numbers and get some double teams on guys and an option of defender so you don't have to block him. It's a relatively simple concept. You don't have to do anything different for the offensive line because you're just, you know, running the base blocking that you would with inside zone, or maybe if it's like a power read, then, you know, you're just running that. So it's a pretty simple thing to install or to emphasize in the playbook if you already have it there, that can do some really effective things for your offense and kind of help you out. So I expect that's something that we'll see a fair amount of on Saturday.
Yeah, and then a quick note on the Giovanni front. He's played 2 games up to this point, and I don't think I've seen enough, and the staff, more importantly, has seen enough that they're going to consider burning his red shirt at this point of the season with 4 games left. No. I would think that we probably don't see him if things go as planned against Marshall, particularly if whoever is the quarterback can stay healthy. And depending on Tom's availability and what the situation is, I think if there is a point where Evan comes in and things don't clear up and Tom's back problem continues to be a concern, if we're going to see Giovanni again, I think the most likely scenario is that November 23rd game against North Texas and that last game against UTEP. I think we're at the point where, and we saw Rice do this with Juma Otaviano last year, where he ran, it was actually against North Texas, where he ran maybe 15 snaps from Wildcat, and it was a modified kind of version of the offense that was able to actually move the ball, and Rice was neck and neck with North Texas well into the fourth quarter last year. So I think if we're going to see Giovanni again and have a more extended role, they're going to wait and give him as much time as possible to get comfortable in this new version of the offense.
Well, yeah, I think you just solved our problem right there, because Juma's healthy enough to play now. He didn't make much of an impact in 3 carries on Saturday, but it was good to see him back out on the field. So let's just put Juma at Wildcat quarterback. He's the quarterback now.
There you go.
We've done it.
Probably a good thing that they don't consult us, because I don't know what I'd do on the second snap of the game where that didn't work.
Yeah, I might have the, you know, most offensive coordinators script out the first drive or the first 15 plays or something like that. And, you know, maybe I could do an okay job of that. And then we'd get to that and they'd be like, all right, coach, what do we do now? And I'd be like, good luck, gentlemen.
Yep. This is complete aside, but I think back to when the Chicago Bears missed that game-winning field goal in the playoffs last year. There was a brewing company up in Chicago that said, because of course everyone was saying not very pleasant things on the internet to that kicker, you know, it's your job, you're a professional kicker, you have to make that kick. So this brewing company went ahead and built a NFL regulation size and dimension goalpost. They set it up out of the back of their brewery, and they had people sign up to take kicks. And I don't remember how long the field goal was. It was like 38 yards or something like that. They said, you make a 38-yard field goal, you get free beer for a year or something like that. And so, of course, everybody lined up to go do it, and they filmed it, and it ended up on, I don't remember, ESPN2 or something like that. And, of course, not a single person had a kick that even was remotely close to going through. So I always think back to that as it's easy, especially when, you know, the team is not doing well or somebody has a mistake. Oh, I could have done better. And I'm like, well, every time I see or try anyone come close, there's a reason the experts are the experts and a bit more than us.
No, not to keep us too far afield, but Katie Nolan, who's now at ESPN, did something similar a little while back, where I think it was after the NFL Combine, where that, you know, she trolled Twitter for all these tweets about where people were saying like, oh, you know, like so-and-so running back ran like a 4.8, like I could run faster than that. And she like brought these people into a, you know, like a facility where they had like a 40-yard dash thing set up, and it was like they had no idea what they were there for. And she was fantastic. A month ago, you tweeted that you could run a 4.4. Prove it. And they were like, oh, okay. So she had all these kids, and they're all running like, because you don't have an, like, you know, when you see these quarterbacks and stuff and offensive linemen run like a 5.5, you're like, oh, that's so slow. I'm telling you, unless you are like a former runner or former athlete who keeps in great shape, you could not break 6 seconds. I am telling you, people have no appreciation for how fast even the absolute slowest football players are. The slowest, most out of shape 360-pound defensive lineman on any team in college football would absolutely smoke you in a 40-yard dash.
Yeah, because I've seen these guys do their strength training with the strength staff and Hans Straub, and it is amazing. I'm scared.
Yeah.
Like the Vince Wolfwerk 40-yard dash run. It's like, people that big should not move that fast. Yeah.
Moving over to the Marshall offense.
There we were.
In some ways, they're a lot like the UTSA offense, just better. They're kind of a spread-to-run team. They run the quarterback a lot. Isaiah Green, he's pretty athletic. They are not the most effective passing team in terms of... you know, like Green's completing under 59% of his passes. His quarterback rating is just 128.6, 7.0 yards per attempt. Not a really refined or consistent passing game, but they'll hit you on some. So the big thing about them is that they love their tight ends and they'll use them in all kind of formations and packages. And I tweeted something about this earlier today, day of recording being Wednesday, about most of their tight ends that they use are kind of the big receiver mold that's 6'2", 6'3", 220 to 230 pounds, but more of undersized tight ends rather than like true large wide receivers, because they're not, you know, they're not like 4'4" guys. They're not blazing. Most of these, three of the four tight ends that have caught a pass are all averaging under 10 yards per catch. So they're used more in classic tight end roles as receivers, but you know, they'll line these guys up out wide. They'll line them up at H-back. They'll line them up in line. The play I highlighted in the film room, which is up as of the time you're listening to this, they ran a four receiver set out there. So you're like, oh, it's like 10 personnel, four wides, one running back. It's actually 13 personnel, because three of the four wide, there are no H-backs, no inline tight ends. Three of the four wide receivers on this play are tight ends. You know, they use those guys a lot. They have tight ends that are first, second, and I think fifth on the team in receptions, and like first, fourth, and seventh in yards. And they have a combined like seven touchdowns between them. But they have
a
one
lot for a tight end group.
Yeah. And they have this one guy, Armani Levias, who leads the team in receptions, yards, and touchdowns. He's 6'4", 255, and they just line him up at X receiver and let him get matched up on a cornerback, and he'll just outrun cornerbacks. They literally ran, this is the play I broke down in the film room, they ran that glance route RPO where the receiver runs a skinny post and you're reading the safety on his side of the field. I broke down this exact play for Rice ages ago with Brad Rosner, that they got a big play where they got down to the 2-yard line. And they run that same play, only with a guy who is an inch shorter and about 60 pounds heavier than Brad Rosner. And he just straight up blew by the cornerback who he had 65 pounds on that play. And I was like, what? This is... No.
Not big men aren't supposed to move that fast.
You're not supposed to be able to do that.
Full circle.
So that is going to be the biggest challenge of this game. And you know, it's that they don't use their wide receivers all that much. They don't have a receiver with more than 15 catches. They have one with Brock Thompson has 15. Corey Gamage has 13. None of their other wide receivers have more than 10. But they have both of so Brock Thompson has 19.3 yards per reception. And then Willie Johnson has only 9 catches on the year, but for an average of 23.8 yards. So they're either hitting you underneath to those other tight ends, or they're hitting you downfield to Levias or to one of their incredibly fast wide receivers. Green has kind of a weird sort of short arm delivery that I think is the cause of a lot of his accuracy issues. So even on plays where that, you know, he's 11 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. So, you know, he's a guy that is going to do a fair amount of not so impressive things in the passing game, but they've got the playmakers that, you know, when you're really focused on stopping their option run game and getting in the box to shut them down, you know, if you leave an opening over the top, he's not going to hit all of those plays, but he's got enough good ones that if he hits one of those plays, it's going for a long way.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Green, so he came on this stage as a freshman last season and had a lot of those plays and those moments to the point where he was talked about as one of the guys entering year two that, you know, we're really excited to see what this guy could be. And there was a lot of expectation put on him, and as he develops in this offense, that he could continue to be even better than he was. But really, and I think Marshall fans will attest this, he's been the same guy. Like, he's on pace, like, quarterback rating last year 128.2, this year 128.6. He's roughly on pace with the same kind of touchdown to interception ratio, yards to attempt about 7, about the same completion percentage, same yards. Like, he's kind of been the same guy. And that guy last year, like you said, had those moments, but was also kind of inconsistent and did turn the ball over in some inopportune spots. So I think versus coming in last week, Jack Abraham has had his bad days, but for the most part is a very efficient, effective quarterback. Green has not been there. He's kind of shown moments where he can play up to that, but his norm is a lot more in the middle. So if, you know, this is coming off Lowell Narcisse lighting up the Rice defense for a career game, but theoretically, you should see, with the defense and the secondary playing how it is, should be able to limit him and wait and force him into some of those mistakes and hopefully open up more doors for the offense.
Right. Like, I don't want to count on this Rice defense shutting them down necessarily or putting up a really great defensive performance because, you know, if exactly like what I said, and you brought up UTSA, like they're a lot like UTSA there, but they're, I think it's fair to say that they're better. And so if they play like they did against UTSA, it's not going to go terribly well. On the flip side, if they play like they did against Southern Miss, if they play like they did against Louisiana Tech, that kind of performance is more than enough to get the job done against this offense. And if they can get that kind of thing, if they can get that level out of this group on Saturday, then they'll be in position to win. It's just all going to go back to the offense and whether or not they can could put points on the board.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not rocket science. It's nothing we've seen before. Green's going to drop back to pass, and you need to make him earn it and make him work for it. And one of the two things that Rice has said time and time again that are the keys to them winning this year is not turning the ball over on offense and not letting the ball go over your head on defense. And the turnovers we've talked about, that's still an issue. But the defensive front end not letting the ball go over their heads, Green will take some shots. That's an area where they've found a lot of success. And so I think we could see more of a battle than we were at this point last year. And it should be another competitive game. And I'm kind of going and expecting it one way or another to be a one-score game in the fourth quarter. And one of these games, the offense is going to find that play.
Yeah, you know, and it's worth pointing out, I think, that, you know, we can point to Rice's issues, especially on offense, and say, this is the reason why they're getting to these one-score games, but they can't finish this out because they can't, you know, they can't just get that drive when they need it. They can't score the touchdown. They can't, you know, get that one last thing on offense that they need. It's also fair to point out that they play a lot of one-score games, and usually if you play a lot of one-score games, you're gonna win some of them. And
positive
so,
regression.
Yeah, like, it goes both ways. Like, they're, at some point, if you keep playing one-score games, you're gonna win one. So just, you know, they need to get better on offense, but they, as long as they can keep taking teams to deep water, as you know, as we have said, as Bloom has said over and over again, if you can get them there over and over again, you the metaphor that immediately came to mind was you can drown them.
Rice bite. All right.
I feel like that's a logical extension of the metaphor, but maybe a slightly more morbid one we want to take. But yeah, I mean, you keep getting there, eventually you're going to win one.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see what changes get put into play on offense this week. And I'm interested to see, especially because the blueprint for stopping this offense is out, and we've seen it. I want to see how they're able to counteract that. And, you know, Marshall is going to be a test. They're going to be, I think it's probably fair to say Southern Miss was more along the lines of a finesse offense than a power offense. And Marshall is going to be probably a little bit more physical and a little bit more in your face and not try and attack around the edges as much and get yards after the catch. So this is going to be one where the defense is going to have to earn it, and it should be more of a dogfight, which, you know, when things start, pads start popping and people run into people, that's opportunities for big plays on both sides of the ball. So there's a lot of reasons to remain optimistic and just be curious to see what this team is going to look like going forward. Because, I mean, as we saw from last game, they're going to keep fighting and they're going to be in it.
All right. I think that about covers it for this week. Any last thoughts?
I think we're all set.
All right. Well, we will see y'all next weekend. Hope y'all that are in town for homecoming, you're going to enjoy it. If any of you happen to be Jones alumni that are planning to be at the Jones alumni tailgate on Friday afternoon, I will be there. So stop by and say hi. But yeah, have a happy homecoming, and we will see y'all next week. And Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.